of the conference.
Yep.
Consider an IAS 27 question that came up to us specifically, put options written over non-controlling interests. And David, this is not the first time you brought this topic to us, but with all of the papers that you brought in here, very complete analysis, I hope.
We'll see. Okay, another nice, easy Thursday afternoon topic for everyone here. Agenda paper 4A gives an overview of the issues we're planning to run through here relating to puts written over non-controlling interests. If you recall back to the May meeting, we decided to add this to the agenda, and the specific question that we were asked to consider here was how an entity should account for changes in the carrying amount of a financial liability that's recognised for a put option written to a non-controlling interest shareholder. The key issue that was raised in the request is identification of a conflict between the financial instruments literature, which would imply that these changes should be recognised in profit or loss, and some of the guidance in IAS 27, which could be read to indicate that the changes should be recorded in equity. Other thing I'll just remind everyone of is this is also an issue that's certainly been raised by regulators in at least one IFRS jurisdiction. In considering the sort of next steps here, in paragraph 9 of the agenda paper, we've identified two key scoping issues. The first of these is related to which components of the accounting for puts over NCI we should include in interpretation, and secondly the question of what exactly the definition of puts to be included in this interpretation should be. We focused on the components of the accounting, including, I think was requested by some of the members at the May meeting, some illustrative examples today. So we've got four additional agenda papers, some of which I think we'll cover today, some maybe tomorrow, which address the initial recognition, subsequent measurement issues, both for the financial liability and also a question we're aware of relating to dividends, and also the settlement or expiration of these instruments. As we started to sort of think through this, I think it's clear that, well, certainly to me as I started working through the main issue we were asked, that certainly some of the subsequent accounting decisions are linked to the rationale that people use for initial recognition of these instruments. And I think further, once you begin sort of considering approaches to subsequent accounting, it does create some of these additional issues around settlement, expiration, and how to account for dividends. And although not the subject of the request, we've certainly heard from constituents that to varying degrees, there are some different approaches in practice on these issues. So I think one of the challenges here, certainly as we go through the components of the accounting, is just to consider the interaction between the different papers here and, you know, some of the challenges we may face in reaching consensus and trying to align that with certainly some of the diversity that we're aware of in practice here. In considering the components of the accounting, in paragraph 13 of Agenda Paper 4A, we've identified a definition of NCI puts. This definition is really just for purposes of working through the issues over the next 2 days. As we identify later in the paper, we would propose thinking through what the definition of NCI puts to be included in the interpretation should be at the next meeting. This could include consideration around, you know, what the implications of the puts issued as part of a business combination, or some other issues we've heard relating to, you know, what about if the puts settled with something other than cash, for example, equity instruments. And I think the other issue we plan on certainly addressing in a future meeting would be transition issues relating to any instruments that were issued previously. And also I think we're going to have to continue to monitor the FICE project and just what the implications are on that project for the model. I'm going to raise that in some of the later papers because I do think that is an interesting and important consideration here as we work through. That's sort of the overview of the papers. I think my proposal now would probably be to start working through them and starting with what I hope is a sensible start point, which would be initial recognition, which we address in 4B.
In paragraph 13, where we take out, we're excluding the puts that are issued in business combinations. If you take that out, those are the only examples I've ever seen in practice.
Yeah, I think what we'll find when we get into that issue is the question of contingent considerations is another argument that we'd have to work through and we thought through. But I think it was just, you know, we've got quite a heavy volume here, and certainly from a staff perspective, we prefer to think through a very vanilla instrument here and think through and try and establish a basic accounting framework. And then when we think about the definition of puts, we see that issue, we see some others, and really start questioning how they fit with this model, to what extent they are different. And I think certainly our thought process on the business combinations is, one is, it is impacted by some of the recent changes in IFRS 3. And certainly my view is that you can certainly begin to fit it into the model we've established here. We were just trying to at least reduce the number of issues we were opening up in this session today.
John Lee?
I have the same type of reaction of speaking as I mentioned. I think if we are, we cannot say it that way because we will see that part of the subject when we will have further discussion is whether we have transfer control or not. So we will pretty close to IFRS 3 anyway. So I understand that, I will say that's difficult to say we are going to deal with a vanilla example because in the type of this type of ice cream we have many type of different flavor than vanilla. So I understand you what you want to do is to restrict the scope on to, but I'm not sure that saying that everything which is in connection with IFRS 3 is outside is the way you can go forward.
I think I would say that obviously when we bring back the issues next time and open it up to consider business combinations, we would of course consider sort of reflecting back any decisions at that future meeting on any sort of tentative decisions that may be made at this meeting to see, well, do those future discussions affect or make us reconsider what we might discuss today?
But if it makes you feel any better, both of you, I also had similar concerns when I read the list and thought that this doesn't address the sort of thing that I really want to deal with. But I think I've got confidence in the staff's analysis to say that if we did make it more encompassing and broader, we'd have more difficulty in actually understanding the different components and the different elements as we're going through. So it might seem a contrived exercise. But if we don't get through this meeting, then we're going to have difficulty in taking it any further forward. And I think if you put in business combinations or any of the other features that really trouble us, that we would never finish, not this meeting, not next, nor the third and final meeting. So if we can just bear that in mind when we're asking David questions later or making comments, that we are dealing with this very narrow set, just to look at how this could be applied in practice, and then we can broaden it later. Okay, David.
Okay, thanks, Bob. So on paper 4B, we're getting some debits and credits, I guess, is the first place to start. So I think we begin the analysis in paragraph 5 of the paper, really considering what the credit entry here should be, the initial recognition of the put. In keeping with some of the decisions that were made by the committee back in November 2006, and actually I think our general understanding of where current practice is today on this, we as a staff continue to support recognition of a financial liability on the initial recognition for the NTI put instrument, believing this is really in line with the guidance in IS 32 currently. I think we see the, I certainly see the debit entry on initial recognition as more challenging to think through. Again, we've looked to some of the guidance in IS 32, which indicates that the debit entry should reflect a reclassification of this financial liability from equity. But it still creates, I think, certainly a couple of questions in my mind. You know, one of which is which component of equity should this reclassification be from? And there we're thinking about, you know, is it NCI? Is it controlling interest equity? Is it some sort of combination of both? And then secondly, the issue around whether we should continue to recognise NCI or not after the put instrument has been issued. The approach I've proposed is outlined in, I think, paragraph 13 onwards of the paper, and focuses on whether in substance the NCI put instrument, and by the way, that might be in combination with other factors going on here or other instruments, but whether in substance we feel that the parent has what I call a present ownership interest in those shares. And that's really applying some of the guidance in IS 27 that we've mentioned. As such, we've really proposed a model where, first of all, in a, I've labelled it situation one in the paper, a determination is made that the entity has acquired a present access to the economic benefits. In that situation, our recommendation would be that the financial liability represents a reclassification from non-controlling interest, and as a result of that, we no longer would recognise NCI going forward after recognition of the put. In contrast, I think our proposal is that if in substance the determination is made that the NCI shareholder continues to retain access to the benefits of the shares rather than the parent, then, and this is situation two in the agenda paper, we're proposing, and it's labelled as view A, that the reclassification there would be from controlling interest equity, and we would continue to recognise non-controlling interest on a go-forward basis. What we thought, I think, we did look at some alternative views here, but we rejected view B in the paper, which would be an approach that says you assume that the NCI put has already been exercised and effectively already acquired the interest. And we also rejected a sort of mixed model in view C that may or may not lead to, or generally does lead to continued recognition of NCI, but may lead to the reclassification being from both components of equity. So I think we just asked two questions here. Question one in paragraph 56 is a question around whether the committee would agree with our approach to the credit entry here being to a financial liability. And secondly, whether the committee agrees with our approach here to the debit entry, which really focuses on this question of whether or not the parent has in substance acquired a present access to the economic benefits relating to the shares subject to the put, and then whether those should be included as guidance in this proposed interpretation.
I can just say that the reference to the judgment that is being made, obviously as we point out in the papers, is so that we're picking up from the implementation guidance to IAS 27. What the proposals in the paper are not intended to help somebody reach or give guidance as to how to reach that judgment, but having made that judgment, what should the accounting then be? So what we're proposing here in the paper is what accounting should be applied after an entity has made the judgments that Article 27 requires them to make.
Okay.
I respect this paper and the work done by David, but the simple question is, if we do not recognize liability in a gross basis, then the problem can be solved quite easily. And actually, I heard that, as you said, that in the FIDE project, it's recommending that we should recognize liability in a net basis. And I understand that there is a IAS 32, paragraph 23, which requires us to recognize liability, financial liability. But we could make kind of annual improvement to put some conditions that some transaction with shareholders of NCI can be excluded from the IS 32 para 23, especially the last part of this paragraph. But is there any chance for us to think about such kind of approach?
I think you have been thinking about that as a kind of approach. But I don't think that that's going to address the concern on a broader basis at the moment, just to look at those circumstances and exclusion. We can't have a blanket exclusion in 32 that it doesn't apply to transactions with other equity holders, because equity instruments are financial instruments. But I'm sure David will take your thoughts, views and suggestions into consideration with everybody else's. Bernd?
As we have to, we learn now that the approach not account for it at all is not the way we're going to do it. We have to account for it in some way, and I think it is a financial liability, because in the end they have to pay for it in some way. So I think credit as a financial liability is the right way to do it. When it comes to the debit entry, I don't think that debiting NCI is the right way, because if I look from it as from an outside perspective, then NCI would completely go away. Is that correct? So the outside investor would not see that there is an NCI at all. On the other hand, secondly, it is within the discretion of the NCI holder to exercise the put option, right? So the outside investor does not see that there is an NCI. On the other hand, it might remain there if he doesn't exercise. So we have to show the investor to some extent that there is a minority interest in there. So I don't think that debit NCI would be right. I would debit the rest of the equity.
Luca?
I have the same position, but I think that the approach followed by the staff is correct, because in order to respond to the specific question, we have to understand which are the starting points. So I agree that at the moment there is a liability that has to be recognized, but I agree that it could be really misleading for the investors to see an equity without a component and non-controlling interest, because it seems to anticipate an effect that is the exercise or of the puts that is not in the hands of the entity or the controlling party. It's absolutely in the hands of the non-controlling interest, so it's absolutely outside my control, and I don't know why I have to I cannot understand why I have to present an equity in which this past of equity is assumed to be of the controlling party that has the put option has yet been exercised.
Okay, John Lee.
I do agree that we should start by considering both sides of the entry, that's to say the debit and the credit. But I think we should not, we should keep in mind what Taka says, because there is a liability effect, but maybe not the one we consider generally as the gross amount of the transaction, and maybe a net effect on liability. So I do agree that we should start considering the debit aspect, but also the impact on the credit aspect. And the point mentioned by Luca, whether we should debit or not NCI, and isn't clear to me. And the fact that we could not have a mixed model is still a matter to be discussed. That's the view C in the paper.
Andrew?
I thought it was a good paper prepared by the staff. I like the derivative answer, but I just don't see how you can go there at the moment. The standard tells us to record a gross financial liability, so I think, personally, I think the answer on the credit entry is clear. On the debit side, I mean, I'm happy with the staff's analysis around present ownership, access to present ownership benefits, and I think if the parent has got the present access to ownership benefits, then you really ought to de-recognise the minority, and there's words in the basis for conclusion for IS-22 that lead you straight to that direction. BC-11 says, to the extent of the obligation, those shares cease to be equity instruments when the entity assumes that obligation. So, I mean, to my mind, the weight of the evidence is towards de-recognising the minority interest, although I would accept the sort of analysis in the Stars paper. I just had one follow-up question, perhaps not for... If you continue to recognise the minority... Sorry, the NCI. If you continue to recognise the NCI and you book movements on the liability through the P&L account, presumably you're giving the NCI their share of the profits for the year after the movements. And I kind of struggle with that a bit, but I guess that's inevitable, really. The inevitable quality of the mechanics.
I think the NCI would only be allocated their share of profit.
It's in the group numbers, eh?
Sorry, I need people with the mics on can talk.
I think Joan was right, actually. The liability would probably be in the parent, so that wouldn't...
Yeah, yes. So the subsidiary, the NCI would only be allocated the share of the subsidiary's profits. Yeah.
Scott?
One thing that isn't mentioned here but seems to be an assumption throughout the analysis is that this put was issued by the parent for free, which seems unlikely to me. It seems like a part of the debit would be whatever the parent got in exchange for the put. Now, of course, in a business combination, it would just be part of the business combination accounting. But otherwise, if I'm a parent, I'm not writing a fixed price put to the holder of the NCI without getting something in return. Cash or a contract to do business or services, there's something being received in return. Perhaps a fair value put might be issued for little or no consideration because it has little or no intrinsic or time value. But a fixed price or formula price put is always going to have at least time value and may also have intrinsic value. So there's something on the debit side we're ignoring. And I was having trouble thinking through this issue because that constantly was hitting me. part of the debit is cash or something else, or maybe expense. Maybe this is settling a lawsuit with the holder of the NCI. So I think a piece of the debit is missing. But if we ignore that, let's assume it's a fair value put. There's no intrinsic or time value, and we did, you know, really issue it just because, you know, we wanted to keep the NCI holder happy, and so we gave him a fair value put, so he knows he's got some liquidity. Well, there I'm not in situation one because I'm not going to have present access to the economic benefits if it's a fair value put. So I jumped right to situation two. I acknowledge we do have to record a liability for the current redemption value, much as I like tax suggestion of just record it net, because that would be zero at this point, now that I've redefined the scope of the issue. We do have to record a credit for the full amount. And so now thinking of what the debit is, I agree that eliminating the non-controlling interest at this point entirely doesn't feel right to me, but neither does taking it all out of parent equity, because now we really are double counting. We're recognizing a liability for the fair value of the NCI. If we pay off that liability, there is no more NCI. And by recording it as a liability, we're implicitly saying we're going to pay it off. So I'm left with the mixed model as the only thing that doesn't feel like it has a basic flaw in it from the beginning. I'm not particularly happy with that conclusion because it is more complicated to apply and does raise a lot more questions. Can we drive the NCI negative in applying the mixed model and what have you? But I find that neither of the other two is acceptable to me.
Sean?
Maybe it's somewhat related to Scott's comment. I also believe that the accounting is somewhat flawed. Seems to me there's double accounting here. The liability at the gross amount is my purchase price for the NCI. So I put my purchase price for the NCI as if it's bought, but the NCI still shows in my equity. Well, that's why I think if we leave both there, I can only see double counting. So it seemed to me that the right accounting would be to recharacterize the NCI as a liability. And maybe that's what in substance the put is doing, as opposed to creating a new liability distinguishable from the NCI. And that I think that meets the comments of Scott, but because there's a flaw. And even though there may be an accounting trick to solve the double allocation, I think if you have a liability and the liability happens to be fair value, then the put is at fair value. Profit in the entity will bump up the value of my liability, create a loss. And if we argue that there is an NCI, then someone would expect an allocation of my profit to the NCI, which doesn't work. Okay, we can't say it reversed after that, but there's a flaw at the beginning to have these double counting. So I don't see any solution to this double counting other than to get rid of the NCI, although I agree that in substance maybe that's not the case. And maybe the solution will be this net accounting of the derivative. But we're really stuck with flawed accounting here. And I think TAG may have a solution. I'm not too sure what it is, but fixing the flaw, the fundamental flaw, which is that the gross amount of the liability might be flawed if we argue that no, we have not sold the NCI.
You
know? I can see the problem with the double accounting. That's why there are different views out there in the practice. But I see a difference between the two situations described here, where risk and rewards have been transferred and where they haven't been transferred. So where they have been transferred, we we account for this as if the transaction has already taken place, so there is no NCI anymore. I understand that people say, but I would like to see NCI to be aware that technically there is still NCI. Well, we can address that by openly deducting from NCI, so we still have it in equity. Everybody sees there is still NCI, but we account for it as if the transaction has already taken place. So I can understand the reasoning behind that. There's one thing that I'm still struggling with. It has been raised by Bernd, I think. Well, risk and rewards has been transferred, and we account for this as if the transaction has been occurred already. We are referring to arguments for potential voting rights. Now, I understand that risk and rewards has been transferred, but unfortunately, the board is leaning more towards a control model, more and more, and going back from risk and rewards. Potential voting rights are something different. That's something where I, as a parent, have the control to exercise potential voting rights. Whereas when I've written a put option, I have a problem to say that these are potential voting rights. So we can only base this argument on the risk and reward argument, which I still think is a good argument, but I can see that other people have problems with that. So I don't think that there is an issue. I see that there might be two different views. You know, the transfer has been done already, or the transfer may be done in the future. That's why I think I don't have a problem with showing a liability and an NCI at the same point of time, because it's not a liability that 100% will have to be paid. You know, it depends on whether the put option will be exercised. So, you know, that's why I'm a little bit more, flexible in saying yes, I can show NCI and liability because there is no transaction that has been taking place already. There's only one other issue about the credit. I obviously agree that under present rules we have to show a liability, but I was wondering when I looked into I-32/23, where it says that you should show them at fair value initially, that's also proposed here, but then it says in brackets, that's the present value of redemption amount. I was asking myself, does that include own credit risk? Maybe that's an issue that we do not want to touch.
Okay, Ruth.
Just in terms of the order of the questions, question one, agree that it is an IS32 liability measured under current rules of the present value of the redemption amount, so don't have an issue with that. On the debit entry in the first scenario where the risks and rewards pass on day one, agree that the NCI has gone. Share Guido's concern about moving to a control model under consolidation, which would be unhelpful to this approach, and I prefer the risks and rewards approach. So agree that the NCI should go. The debit should go to NCI because, in substance, it's an acquisition of the NCI. And I think the problem of showing outsiders that the NCI is still there can be resolved through some form of disclosure. On the second one, which is where the risks and rewards have not been assumed by the parent, I think in concept the NCI should still be there because it is still there, but agree that there is a double counting problem. And I just wonder whether that can be dealt with through the accounting mechanisms rather than through display, so that there should still be an NCI, but somehow in the mechanics of allocating the subsidiary share of profit to the NCI and at the same time increasing the liability in the parent and therefore debiting expense in the parent's account. So the increased amount of the NCI, you are creating a double whammy effectively to controlling interest. If you can give some thought to how we could possibly resolve that, because I think that's the double counting concern, is you're getting a double hit effectively on consolidation. But in concept, the NCI is still there, and so I agree with still showing it, but there's a mechanical issue with the accounting.
Charlie?
When I first read this paper, I was in total agreement with it. Having now heard the discussion around the table, I actually am not in agreement with it, and it is more in terms of the words that are actually in 32, and that word reclassification We have been focusing on saying, and the discussions around here, do we still have NCI or don't we still have NCI, i.e. the transfer of the risks and rewards, and some people still want to retain it there. But what 32 is doing, and what I'm coming to the view of, it uses the words, we are reclassifying the NCI from, and it doesn't say the NCI, I agree, but if I put those words in, we're reclassifying the NCI from being equity to being a liability because its nature has changed, because we now have an obligation in respect to that NCI which we didn't have before. And therefore, if you look at it saying that actually that is what we are doing, we are changing the nature of it, we still do have NCI, but it's now sitting in the liabilities bit of the balance sheet as opposed to the equities bit. And therefore, to me, the conclusion is you will all, the debit, you will have a credit which goes to liability, your debit will always go to NCI in equity, but we will also have a disclosure around we still have some NCI, but we're calling it a liability instead of equity. And I've only thought about that as the discussion has been going on. As I say, when I looked at this paper, I was in total agreement, but listening to the discussion now, I think, actually, we're focusing on the wrong thing. So, as I say, they're just thoughts that have come to me in the last little while and may be complete nonsense.
Nuance?
I think that throughout the papers there is this tension about whether are you focusing on the nature of the instrument and whether it is a pure financial instrument, in which case you're going to apply the IAS 32, IAS 39 logic throughout. And it will lead you to where you are according to the SAP's proposal. On the other hand, as Jean rightly explained it, and many of you around the table, does this accounting make sense? Because in effect it is creating some double counting, and when you try to explain or try to understand what this accounting leads to, you have great difficulty understanding why in the end you're going to generate losses when you have a profitable subsidiary to which you're going to repurchase shares. So why having so much hit, same time so P&L or possibly equity. But. And so this is why I somehow follow what Tak said at the beginning. Maybe as an alternative, along our discussion, going through those papers, we may keep in the back of our mind something that perhaps is beyond just a simple interpretation that should go to the board for having a look at the depending on the direction we will go, when we think appropriate. Does the outcome make sense? Make sense.
Well, I think we should, for the time being, concentrate on the initial transaction, initial recognition, and leave aside the subsequent accounting. But, Joanna, I would have a question for you with this idea of reclassification. That's okay if the liability you recognize is equal to the underlying NCI. But in most cases, the value will include some form of a goodwill that we no longer recognize according to IAS 27 revised. Some of us did not agree to that, but the board, in its wisdom, did decide that you have no additional goodwill upon acquisition of NCI. So, what do you do with the difference? You cannot have a negative NCI as well. The board decided to have no negative NCI.
Maybe you can.
No, 37 says you have no negative NCI. I don't think so. Is it true or not?
NCI can go negative by allocating losses.
Okay, but that is not a loss of the entity subsidiary. That is a loss, if any, that is a loss of the parent. Well, so to allocate a supposedly loss of the parent because you don't recognize the goodwill, then you have some form of a loss to the NCI. It makes also strange accounting in a way. So I think you are bound, if you reclassify, to say any excess of the value, gross value of the put over the underlying percentage of equity, NCI, has to go somewhere. So it is a debit to P&L or it's a debit to the equity of the parent controlling it.
Right.
Johanna, you want to respond?
Yeah,
Yeah, I had, and I deliberately didn't talk about the measurement when I made that suggestion because I thought it's not always going to be the same. But now thinking about it, when you said that, I certainly would argue that if you use my logic, you couldn't have anything. You couldn't have a negative NCI because the whole point is NCI in relation to that subsidiary has been reclassified. It shouldn't be in equity at all. But then thinking about, well, what is the difference? I agree with Scott to start with that some of the debit, you probably did have to pay for something, so in the first place, so there might be something else in exchange. But then thinking about it, it probably is you are like, where else could it go? It can go to P&L or it can go to equity. And it probably, my logic would be that it should go to equity because you are effectively purchasing, it is your own equity you're dealing with. In effect, you're purchasing your own equity and therefore, if you do pay more for it, I mean, that's where, if you did straight out buy it, where would you go? Where would it go? If you bought that NCI, so forget the fact you've got a put, where would it go? Equity. So, effectively, isn't that where it should go now? So, yes, I would. So, if you like, it is your version C, but I will get there on a different, for a slightly different logic. So, the difference will go to equity.
In both the SAS model and Joanna's model, which I think is UC, we have the issue of, you know, agreeing to buy something at fair value leads to a reduction of equity, which seems odd. I have agreed to purchase something for 100 when it is worth 100. You know, that it seems odd that that's a reduction of equity, although in view C, it's a lower reduction of parent equity than it is in UB, now I've got my views confused, but it does feel to me like reducing it from the NCI produces less of a mischaracterization of what's going on than leaving the full NCI there does. I mean, again, we're getting back to, I think the real problem is we all don't like recording the gross liability, but we can't resolve that at this point.
Patrick, were you wanting to make a comment or not? No. Okay. So now we've had the discussion. Fun part is if I try and summarize this, David.
I can help you with one bit, Bob, which is, I think, personally, I certainly agree with the comments here, which is if it's a liability we're recognising here was on a net basis. You know, I think I certainly am of the view that gets us to a more sensible answer, but the challenge is, and comments I heard around the table sort of support this, that currently with a 32 model, I think that liability is on a gross basis, and that certainly is one of the first challenges and roadblocks to deal with.
So I suppose that's laying down the principle that if we want to do some work on this, we've got to stay within the confines of the existing literature. So if we look at question one, does anybody disagree with staff recommendation? This is question one on page 14, preceding paragraph 57. Anybody disagree with the staff recommendation that the credit entry should be to recognise the financial liability initially measured at the present value of the redemption amount? Oh, okay. So that was one easy part. On the final page, or page 18, let's take these two separately. Question two, the first part, does anybody disagree with the staff recommendation that when an entity in substance has acquired a present access to the economic benefits, that NCI is reduced to zero and is no longer recognized. Is that up? It's not a question. Three. Okay. So we're still all right on that. And then the second part of that question, staff recommendation is that if an entity does not acquire present access to the economic benefits, then the debit entry on initial recognition of NSI is put to controlling interest, and NCI continues to be recognized. Who disagrees with that? Okay. You were disagreeable as well, were you?
Not really, but if the alternative there is...
If you recognise the NCI in all cases, then I'd be happy with that as well.
Okay, so it sounds like the area where we have difficulty in reaching an agreement then is where the parent does not acquire present access to the economic benefits.
Which is the majority situation.
Yes, yes.
Which is why it came to us in the first place.
Now, Joanna, I know that you had talked earlier about, well, if it's a reclassification, then shouldn't there be an elimination of that NCI every time? And someone else also talked about the concerns about double counting by continuing to recognise NCI. So maybe we could ask for views on if the proposal was for NCI to be eliminated every time. So in other words, following this reclassification approach, who would object to that?
I think it would be applying view A to all situations. So I think where we're at, well, my sense was view B we couldn't reach a consensus on or tentative decision on. So then there would be, I think, two alternatives that we've talked about. One would be, in these situations, we would always de-recognise the non-controlling interest. So that would be in line with the thought process that Joanna articulated, or else we're into a view C, which was, I'll call it a mixed approach, where we're thinking of an allocation between, I think, components of equity between NCI and parent company equity, which clearly we'll have more complications down the line, but we should be just focused now, I think, on this initial recognition question.
So under view A, if I understand correctly, we would eliminate all of the NCI no matter what the put price is. So NCI is on the books at 100, its fair value is 150, we issue a put at 70. We're going to recognize a liability of 70 and eliminate the entire 100 of NCI, therefore creating a $30 credit, 30 currency unit credit, to parent equity. That can't be right. That's why I said it earlier, I couldn't find myself living with UA either.
Patricia?
I'm a little groggy, so this might not make any sense. But I was thinking along the same lines as Joanna, that if it's a reclassification, and what's happening is they've changed the non-controlling interest equity into redeemable equity. And so it's a different animal. And so if we've got redeemable shares, they're a liability unless they meet certain criteria. So we've got to reclassify, and that's why it says reclassify, because we've changed it from being standard equity to redeemable equity, and we're reclassifying it to liability. And so it makes sense. But I don't see it as a non-controlling interest going away. I see it as being reclassified to redeemable equity, and then it should be accounted for as if it was redeemable equity.
So, Patricia, would you then, when you do that reclassification, because the carrying amount of the NCI that you are reclassifying will be different from the liability value that needs to be recognized, when you do that remeasurement of the NCI, would you see that flowing through profit or loss being a remeasurement of that liability balance?
I would, but that's not in accordance with our standards. unlike Scott, I think, you know, my thinking is right now I could live with the treatment, the view A treatment for this, because I'm viewing it as redeemable shares, and we want to account for them as if they're redeemable shares.
And then presumably the participation in profits that the NCI have, even though they've got a liability, that would be allocated to them, but then somehow cancelled out, because the carrying amount of the liability is going to be the present value of the redemption amount.
I think the...
If they were redeemable shares, that's what...
But the remeasurement of the NCI, because it is now classified as a liability, follows the liability remeasurement rules rather than the traditional NCI remeasurement rules that IAS 27 would normally have us follow. So I think we wouldn't do an allocation within equity of share of profits for the NCI. Instead, what we do is we remeasure the liability, because that's how we're now accounting for the NCI balance.
So there would be no attribution to outside interests?
Correct.
49% NCI over which you've written a deep out of the money put option would then result in accounting for 100% of the earnings of that subsidiary.
That's the problem. I just wrote a deep out of the money put, which will never be exercised. Yet I have eliminated the entire NCI.
That's what we're saying. That's what VUA is. VUA eliminates the entire NCI and only records the liability. Am I correct?
Yes.
Right. VUC doesn't do that. VUC would record a liability for the exercise price of the deep out of the money put and leave the rest as a credit in equity, in the NCI component of equity. It wouldn't move it over to controlling interest. I think the problem with VUA is that I can write a deep out of the money put on my NCI, only record a liability for the exercise price that will never get exercised, and eliminate the entire NCI, thereby triggering either a pickup in parent equity or even worse, a gain. Neither of those is acceptable when I've written what is essentially a non-instrument.
Scott, seeing as we seem to have managed to get you into a corner where you're preferring one of the choices now as opposed to none of the choices.
Well, I said originally that I thought VUC was the only one I could live with. Not because I particularly like VUC, but I really don't like VUs A and B.
But under VUC, then, the attribution of the profit share attributable to the outside shareholders, that would be allocated to this piece that's in equity labeled NCI.
Yeah, unfortunately, VUC leaves me with the double accounting issue when we go to the remeasurement of the liability and the allocation of the earnings. But I find that piece of the double counting issue to be preferable to VUE B, which gives me a double counting issue on the allocation and on the balance sheet, and VUE A, which gives me a no counting issue on the balance sheet. And on the income statement. So I'm left with VUC as being the lesser of the three evils.
Okay, I want to go around the people who've got the lights on. It's after the break this afternoon, but I think it's important we finish this discussion before we take the break. Peggy?
I was just going to say I liked Patricia's analogy of just looking at it like a mandatory redeemable security, and then also just in the question is... When you have a change in terms of the non-controlling interest percentage, if you look at what's done under purchase accounting now for under IFRS and U.S. GAAP, unless you change control, that debit or credit is going to go to equity. So we've already addressed that at
in the past. So I would think that you'd want to get to some kind of a consistent approach for this.
Bruce?
Yeah, just supporting that, I like Patricia's suggestion because for me it helps my problem of the double counting. You re-characterize or reclassify this into redeemable equity, if you like, but it becomes a liability. And then even though you might still have NCI there, you don't continue to allocate them a share of the profits because you've re-characterized them. So I haven't thought through in my head how that would work, but if there's a way to avoid that allocating the profits and recording the movement in the liability such that you get the double whammy, then I think that might be a way to go.
You know?
I can see the problem with the double accounting. Nevertheless, I think that IAS 32.23 doesn't tell us to reclassify from NCI, and if at the end of the day we think it makes sense to show two different situations, one where risk and reward has been transferred and the other, then I could live with that, especially because my understanding is that 32 has some, well, similar kind of double accounting. If the company is going to reacquire some shares, as far as I know, 32 tells you to debit equity and credit liability at that point of time, even though you have not acquired the shares already. So I can understand that people think it's double accounting, but I think you just have to recognize the liability and then credit equity. So I really don't have a problem with that, because I can, from 32.23, I cannot read that we have to debit NCI. And, from a perspective of the user, it makes sense to show that, this transaction has already occurred. The same as the transaction that I've just described, where we show a liability even though we have not gotten the equity shares that we are going to buy. I mean, that's a problem. In this situation here, we say, well, we should de-recognize the asset or the equity before we show the liability, because you can only show a liability when the other part has performed already. Now, I think the same thing occurs in the other situation that I described. I think it's in 32, where we are going to acquire shares. We haven't gotten them, but we have to show a liability, and 32 tells us to show the liability, and then the debit goes to equity. So I've heard the arguments, but I still think that what is proposed in the paper makes sense to me.
So you're still in view B?
I'm still in view, is that view B? Yeah.
That's, John?
Just coming back, we're still focusing on, quite rightly, the way that David has written this paper in terms of scenario one, scenario two, and view A, B, and C, and Scott is focusing on that and focusing on the views. If you take my argument and Patricia's argument of the redeemable shares and the reclassification, then scenario one, scenario two, and the views disappear, and it's not double counting, and therefore, it really is that reclassification. Yes, you still have Scott's issue if it's out of the money that you put something on a balance sheet as liability and your NCI goes away, but I think it would be worthwhile, if others are in agreement with this, of us actually almost asking David to go and do some work on that and then refocusing our minds around that way of thinking rather than focusing on this paper and saying, is it view B or view C? Because where I'm at now is essentially scenario one and scenario two have just disappeared. It is simply a reclassification. They are now redeemable shares versus ordinary equity, and we're calling them liabilities instead of calling them equity. And therefore, what are the consequences, as Ruth said? Get your head round, and I can't get my head, where would the profits go, and what does it mean for equity? But that, to me, is the next step.
So are you saying you're neither view A nor view C?
No, I'm not in this paper at all. I'm in scenario three, which is the straight reclassification now.
So no change from any of the other agenda items then?
Absolutely.
Okay. Draw a line. Let's take a break. We'll come back at 4:30 and then I'll ask you a question. Meantime, if my colleagues can remain with me so we can determine what question we're going to ask you.